Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present
Hello and welcome to Gist Radio. We are a casual radio station where we broadcast when we have something to say. Gist stands for Getting the Shit Together, and we broadcast important interviews and information for artists and creators of all kinds. For more information on Gist, please log into our website at www.gyst-ink.com, where you will find free resources, software, and publications for artists. You can email us and let us know what you would like to hear about at info@gyst-ink.com. Thanks for tuning in.
Ah, my favorite theme song. Well, hello everyone and everyone listening. It looks like we've got 14 live callers. That's cool. This is Monica, everyone's favorite Gist jockey. I am on the phone with amazing Julie Diemer. Julie, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Yay.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Let's see, your introduction. Julie is the founding director of Outpost for Contemporary Art in LA, where she assisted artists in developing interdisciplinary projects that are fostered through the organization's residency and exchange program. She has been working in the field of contemporary visual art for 12 years as a gallery owner, director, curator, writer, educator, and fundraiser. She founded Four Walls in San Francisco in 1995 and served as its director for 5 years. As an independent curator, she's organized numerous solo and group exhibitions, both domestically and internationally. Julie has taught at California College of the Arts in San Francisco and at Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, and has served as the development and communications coordinator at LA Contemporary Exhibitions, a nonprofit arts organization. We're all familiar with LACE, of course. So, Julie, let's get right into this. Let's see here. So when I was doing my research, my stalkerish ways, I was really, really interested in, like, how you got to this point. Like, there's so many opportunities and cross streets and pathways that one can take, especially when making decisions about their career and what they're going to do with their time. And I was really curious to see how you got to this point. Like, how did you decide to be a curator, an artist, a writer, an advocate for art?
Okay. Well, let me go way back. I don't know, 15 years ago. I finished up a degree at San Francisco State University in art history and did a really great internship for about a year at Southern Exposure, which is an important nonprofit artist-run organization in the Bay Area, and started getting introduced to artists and the world of ideas. And I was visiting a lot of artist-run spaces that were popping up. This is, you know, early 90s. Mm-hmm. And was just very inspired by the sense of freedom and the interesting sort of experimental creative projects that they were showcasing. And what I really enjoyed about these various ventures that I would take around the city was actually finding these places because
right.
They were often located in parts of the city that I hadn't, you know, frequented. And so it was a bit of a hunt. And once I would find them, you know, the spaces themselves were fairly raw, but, you know, beautiful, and the people that were running them were just really interesting and kind and generous. And I decided that I wanted to engage more deeply in that world. So I started looking for a space and found one in the Mission District where I was living. And I guess that the motivation was to start a space as a way to work with the artists I was meeting and enjoying while living in this same community, which was definitely a creative hub in the city at that time. And I got really lucky when I found this particular space because it was the large upstairs loft of a deaccessioned firehouse that was erected at the turn of the last century. And so it had beautiful Victorian detail and incredible charm. And I just struck a great deal with a landlord who, you know, was a friend. I met him when we both were working at a restaurant. He ran the bar downstairs. And so it was all very serendipitous. Mm-hmm. And about a year later, I gained a partner named Suzanne Stein, and we ran the space together for about 3 years before she moved on to pursue other interests. And I guess, what happened during that period, it was about a total of about 5 years, is I learned how to work with artists. And I feel like what contributed to the success of Four Walls was, you know, in part the space itself. The artists that we worked with absolutely loved it, and they taught us a lot about how to appreciate its inherent architectural beauty. And we quickly learned that artists who thought through and created their exhibitions in response to the physical environment were by far the artists who created the most successful and interesting exhibitions. So I think that, you know, a lot of the projects that we presented were very site-specific and therefore fairly non-commercial and experimental. And so that was really sort of what set me off down this road. Mm-hmm. I loved it. It was so much fun working with artists and inviting people in to experience, you know, the great work that they created for the space. And I guess I got hooked. And that's really sort of what I would say gave me the formative experiences that I needed in order to establish myself as someone who works with artists and have continued to do so, after leaving San Francisco, closing the gallery, and moving to Los Angeles, where I am still working today.
That sounds great. And working with artists has been a huge part of your life, especially dealing with Outpost for contemporary art. And I wanted to know more about that. So what is Outpost without you? That's what I want to know.
Oh, it's going to be fine. We've got a great new director named Ronald Lopez.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, he is embracing the challenge and is ready for this opportunity to lead an organization into its next era. But going back to when I was directly involved, it started in 2004, and I really was looking again for a way to work directly with artists and in a way that was meaningful to me. You know, LA in the early 2000s was very different from what I was used to in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, I came here thinking that I would find, you know, sort of a similar type of community, artist community. San Francisco, you know, for me anyway, was very nurturing, and it could have just been, you know, a certain place and time. But when I arrived in Los Angeles, you know, the commercial art scene was thriving and quite dominant, and this is really the scene I landed in. And for a while, I found it really interesting and exciting, you know, especially in contrast to the beleaguered art market of San Francisco. And I spent a year or two trying to regain my footing by doing lots of studio visits and curating exhibitions and attending lots of openings. And I actually did take a job as the director of an established art gallery for a while. And, you know, I have to admit I was at a bit of a loss. The logical direction probably would have been to open up another gallery, but I really questioned whether or not I'd enjoy living in that world. You know, I'm not a competitive person, and I don't necessarily enjoy the glamour and glitz side of the art world too much. I'm actually pretty uncomfortable with it. So after a while, my love for art was really in question. But fortunately, I found a good job at Lace, where I started meeting a different community and scene. And I found my people, and I was able to separate out, again, what I enjoy about the world of art and ideas from the dominant art world that buys and sells art and ideas. So I guess this is the trajectory, really, that Outpost emerged from.
Right.
And, And just, you know, to give a little bit of background as to where my head was, you know, at that time. Let's see. I sort of lost my track there, but would you like to know sort of about Outpost
itself? I would.
Itself? Okay. Yeah, I guess in all that, I recognized that there were plenty of exhibition spaces and galleries being offered, so I wanted to utilize a different model that I, you know, sort of imagined would reflect the decentralized qualities of the city itself. And I started thinking of Outpost as being a gateway to LA's diverse communities, you know, urban infrastructure, public spaces. And when we started in 2004, the founding board and I recognized that there really was a great opportunity to expand on LA's reputation as an internationally recognized art center by tapping into the global dynamics of the city. And we thought this would serve to make LA's art scene less regional in focus while providing LA residents with a way to access new ideas and perspectives. And so basically the way that we try to do that is by bringing international artists who are interdisciplinary and whose practices lend themselves well to this sort of level of engagement with the people and the city, the dynamics, and we do this in order to, you know, build participation in the arts, promote dialogue, international exchange, forge long-lasting relationships. I guess just, yeah, build community, using international exchange to build community in a city that resists community formation. And so that, those were the things that motivated the founding of Outpost.
Amazing. Every exhibition that's been there. And I know that, you know, Karen Atkinson has a really great relationship with Outpost and supporting kind of like, the sense of community, not using the traditional trajectory that artists take, like going into a gallery and getting signed
right.
by all of that, you know?
Yeah, trying to create surprising encounters with art mm-hmm. and creativity by developing projects in unexpected places. And what's been really fascinating are, you know, the experiences of going to these places, you know, like under the Fletcher Bridge in the LA River. You know, I'd never been there before until an artist from Croatia said, "Hey, I want to do a performance down there." And so it just really opens the city up for me and for others. And I really enjoyed seeing Los Angeles through the eyes of, you know, these international artists in residence. And it's been a very rewarding experience.
And, you know, now that you're moving on from that, you know, do you still work with the Harpo Foundation?
Yes, yeah. I took a job as the executive director of this small family foundation in 2008, I believe. So for the last 2.5 years,
yeah.
I've been directing their program, their grant program, and we started a new fellowship program as well this year. I am doing that now exclusively for the time being, and it's great. It's really a shift because I'm not directly involved in producing projects or working with artists anymore.
Right.
But I still have all the access, you know, to the world of ideas and art that I desire. And what's really important to me is that I'm able to, you know, utilize our grant program to support underrecognized artists, you know, whose projects are, you know, pushing boundaries and conventions and, you know, all that stuff that I enjoy doing.
Absolutely. And so what does this do to the progression of your curatorial practice? Are you still going to curate shows? Are you going to have like a little side thing where you can still engage directly with artists?
Yeah, I think so. Right now I'm really sort of in this place where I'm reevaluating how much of that I want to do. I think that having been a producer, facilitator of art for so long, I'm going to take a break and just enjoy what other people are producing and and really find inspiration again, you know, in this vocation I've chosen for myself. I think running a nonprofit really sort of exhausted me. And I'm now just going to enjoy having, you know, more time in the day and hopefully, you know, the next sort of endeavor will make itself known. But I'm also okay if it doesn't, you know. I'm really enjoying my work with ARPO, and I think I can probably continue to be fulfilled, you know, just serving in that role.
Sounds like such an opportunity, and like so many people, like when I graduated from CalArts in 2009, like the only person I had was Karen, and she was like, you can come intern for me. I don't have any money for you, but you can figure it out. But it was such an opportunity to do the things that I want to do without feeling like or worrying about anything else. Like it was just about my well-being and being fulfilled. So what are you going to do that you haven't done yet, didn't have time to do? Like what are you going to do?
Well, I don't know. Like I said, I'm really sort of in this funny place right now where I'm having to be okay with not having a lot of that structure. A lot of my to-do list is much shorter now. So I think what I'm going to do, which is sort of what I've always done, is just to start looking at art again in a real committed sort of way. When I was running Outpost, and Harpo, I really didn't have time to go out and see, you know, all of the current shows and read all of the, you know, latest magazines and and I think that, you know, that's probably the only way I know how to sort of reengage with, you know, with the, I feel like I need to catch up a little. Even though I've been immersed in, you know, my own sort of production in my own sort of corner of the city and in my living room doing what I do to get, you know, the work done, there's still all of the other stuff going on in the city that I've really sort of kept at arm's length. And, you know, like all the lectures and panels and various other sorts of like social engagements and things that I really had to put aside. So I think I'm just going to start going out more and see what happens.
Yeah. And what are your favorite things to see? Are you, you love performances? Do you love visual art? Do you just love it all? Site-specific installations, of course. But what's your favorite kind of art?
Well, I would say, you know, I'm maybe I can speak about my favorite collaborations in art, and you know, my it really comes down almost to the people that are making the art. I really have noticed over the years that my love for art is not, it's not absent of the producer. I really enjoy my relationships with artists. And so the more I know about the artist and the person who, you know, made the work, the more I I'll love the work. And so they really go hand in hand for me. And so, yeah, and I'm also really inspired by artists who work outside of the field of art and who cross boundaries. And so collaborations that, you know, invite a diversity of expertise, perspective, opinion, experience, you know, anything where the conversation is going to move away from being insular, you know, and so where there's a certain level of engagement, I guess, to the sort of social dynamics of the city. But, you know, that's my own sort of personal leaning. I can certainly go see a show of, you know, recent paintings that, you know, that move me. You know, I'm not really only all about collaborative methods of art production,
right,
necessarily. That's what I've chosen to sort of pursue in my own sort of practice. But, yeah, I think that I also, you know, enjoy seeing the, you know, what's going on in the galleries and, you know, sort of trying to understand current trends and that sort of thing.
So a question I like to ask curators is, without, I mean, obviously without naming names, but what is a mistake that artists do when they want to be curated into a show, they want to be a part of it, you know, they've got gumption and persistence and spirit, but X, Y, and Z. So what are the mistakes that these artists are making?
Well, you know, like maybe just going back to what I was saying about building relationships, I think that's something that often misses. A lot of artists might just assume that they can send, you know, a portfolio of images to a random person without ever having met them, and think that they're going to, you know, be interested. I mean, I'm sure that happens, you know, sometimes, but, you know, doing your research and figuring out, like, you know, what does this place actually do, who are the people doing it, and maybe going, attending some of the programs and offerings and, you know, engaging in a dialogue in order to figure out if it's a good fit for their work. You know, that's probably the best advice I could offer. It all starts for me with that sort of interpersonal, you know, relationship. And that doesn't just happen out of the blue. It happens out of a reciprocal sort of interest in each other as people and as artists.
Is that how the grant process works with the Harpo Foundation?
No. That's a separate process that is much more detached from that, what I was just saying. But it's open. It's an open process. We don't, you know, turn down unsolicited proposals. Mm-hmm. But I think artists need to be aware of a couple things. One being that we cannot legally offer a grant directly to artists. So therefore, there needs to be an intermediary, either a nonprofit institution of some sort that's going to sponsor them, present them, you know, work with them, or, you know, in some cases, if there's no venue involved and it's, you know, an artist who wants to create a piece of public art and just needs fiscal sponsorship to, you know, to run the money through, then we've done that before too. So there's that. And then also it's really competitive. There's only a certain amount of money available. And, you know, we see and read through a lot of proposals. So it's just really important to read through the guidelines and make sure, like, really ask yourself the questions, like, does this really make sense, you know, for me this year. Our priorities change. And so what the foundation is trying to do is play an active role in, you know, asking certain questions, trying to respond to various trends or directions that we see artists taking. And, you know, so, yeah, we set up certain priorities. Right now we're currently in a cycle that is trying to look at how artists are addressing the evolving notion of site specificity in a dematerializing world. Mm-hmm. So that's our theme for the last couple of years, and some of the questions that I think we're asking, might be, how is our sense of place being affected by the non-locality of the digital world? Like, for instance, mm-hmm. our conversation today.
Yep.
You know, are we losing the sense of place, or is the threat of losing our understanding of this, you know, sense of place provoking a renewed importance on place? Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, these are questions that we, like, think we see artists addressing in their work. And so we're interested in seeing proposals that, you know, might reflect some of those or answer some of those questions. Next year, in 2012, we're going to put a new emphasis forward, and we're developing that now. So anyway, just like read, you know, it's important to read through the priorities and sort of see where we're going, you know, with them, and just really evaluate whether or not your work makes sense, you know, because we don't want you to waste your time.
Right, right. And that's a perfect segue. We have 4 minutes left.
Okay.
into how can people, you know, get in touch with the Harpo Foundation, see what the guidelines for the grants are, and then anything that you're going to be doing, any shows that you're working on, any collaborations. All of that. Here's the time.
Oh, okay. Well, we've got a website, harpofoundation.org, and it's, you know, it's serving the purpose now. I am working on developing a new platform that I hope will be more interactive and dynamic. In addition to the website, we've got a Facebook page, so you can sign up to receive, you know, just like us to receive notifications about, you know, funding deadlines and just news about our grantees and that sort of thing. And let's see, what else? There's, I think, you know, there's another program that we're that's more recent than the grant program. That's our fellowship program, mm-hmm. and that is offering 2 full residencies to Native American artists each year to spend 1 month at the Vermont Studio Center, which is a really, really great institution, long-running residency program, the largest in the nation, that offers great facilities and a lot of opportunity to meet and interact with a huge diverse population of artists. I think like 30 or 40 new artists arrive every month from all over the world.
Oh.
So it's a fabulous partnership, and we're really excited about, you know, supporting Native American artists and hopefully providing a platform to learn and understand more about, you know, Native culture, and to basically just provide us with an opportunity to see their work. And all of that is going to hopefully start taking shape on this new website that is under development. So it'd be great to, you know, you can sign up to receive, you know, our news via the website or Facebook.
Fantastic. All right, Julie, that's all of our time. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
so
my
much.
Pleasure. Yeah,
and
it's been great
good
talking
luck
to
with
you.
The space to do whatever you want to do. That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We'll
I appreciate your interest.
Absolutely.
Okay. Bye-bye, Monica.
Bye. Love her? Love her? Yes, absolutely. Okay, so that was Julie Diemer, the former director of Outpost, but still the executive director of Harpo Foundation. She gave you a lot of good information and resources for that. That's harpofoundation.com. So, I don't know. Is it time for a... I should tell you guys. Just Radio is very proud to collaborate and present the new GIST software. It's the ultimate business software for artists. It literally, you could take this software and it is a mentor in your computer, in your pocket, just walk around with it. So much information inside, how to be an artist, how to write an artist statement, how to do your resume, not necessarily like what's good work and what's bad work, but, you know, just ink is here for you. We'll help you out. All right, so GIST 3.2, the newest software. You can try it today. Like, go to the website, www.gist-inc.com. Get that software. It's incredible. You're not going to regret it. And you can try it for 30 days for free. And then if you decide you want to purchase it, or even better, if you already have the GIST software and you want to upgrade, the upgrade is so cheap, a fraction of the actual cost. It's $69, and that $69 will change your life. So get in there, get that GIST 3.2, and in the meantime, you can listen to some theme song. This is Monica, your favorite GIST jockey, and have a good afternoon.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present Your shit together.
Hello and welcome to GIST Radio. We are a casual radio station where we broadcast when we have something to say. GIST stands for Getting Your Shit Together, and we broadcast important interviews and information for artists and creators of all kinds. For more information on GIST, please log into our website at www.gyst-ink.com, where you will find free resources, software, and publications for artists. You can email us and let us know what you would like to hear about at info@gyst-ink.com. Thanks for tuning in.
Your shit together.